Hey everyone, it's Brett here. Quick note just to begin. Some of you have been listening to the podcast for a while, and I realize you may not know what we do at Art of Coaching. The podcast is just one small extension. We are focused on leadership development, and really we sit at the crux of all things leadership, entrepreneurship, and relationships. So if you're somebody that wants to improve how you communicate so that your business can run more smoothly, or maybe it makes your marketing better, or you want to do it because you want to be able to better relate to your spouse or your kids, we have something for you. If you're somebody that wants to improve your staff development, and maybe they need to work on conflict resolution, negotiation, problem solving under pressure, we have programs for that. We do things that are live and virtual so that you can have access to the content you need when it matters most. Please check us out. Go to artofcoaching.com. We've helped people in more than 30 different professions solve some of their biggest problems, because all things human and social are where those problems reside. Learn how to be more confident when you speak. Learn how to get your point across more clearly. Learn how to navigate the power dynamics inherent to life and work. Again, that's artofcoaching.com. And if you have specific questions, you can email us at info@artofcoaching.com. For our live events, we have group discounts, student discounts, first responder discounts. We do in-services all over the world, and we have a dedicated team that can help you no matter what your problem is. We'd be honored to serve you. Last time, that's artofcoaching.com.
Check it out. Check it.
Welcome to the Art of Coaching podcast. I'm Brett Bartholomew, and at a young age, poor communication nearly cost me my life. Now, I help others navigate the gray area of social interaction, power dynamics, and communication so they can become more adaptable leaders regardless of their profession, age, or situation. This podcast is for everybody who is fascinated with solving people problems. So if you're the no-nonsense type who appreciates frank conversations, advice you can put to use immediately, and learning how others navigate the messy realities of leadership, you're in the right place. I'm glad that you're joining us. Let's dive in. All right, quick one here today that you can apply immediately. This one is about a common problem, and we had somebody reach out about this. We've been doing that a lot, so thank you to those of you that are sending in questions. And it is all about being underestimated. Now, let me ground this real quick. This individual, physical therapist, was working with a patient. I'm going to spare some details. Essentially had to collaborate with some doctors, some specialists, because the patient had had some work done and surgeries and what have you. And the main issue was the physical therapist had said, hey, you know, every time I try to communicate with the doctors, because we are part of the same system, it's all in the same building, I just get talked down to. And it's mainly because of my age. They always make comments of, you know, well, how long have you been doing this? Well, I don't know how long you've been doing this, but here's what I think. And it seems like no matter what I do, I can't get them to take me seriously. It's really frustrating, and I feel like I have to assert myself. Any advice? Now, this is going to be specific to this situation. I'm going to try not to get into too much technicality. We have a lot of different episodes on specific influence tactics and power dynamics. We are able to get really deep on these things, but I just want to keep some basic advice here. This also can go for, you know, any of you that are dealing with any kind of discrimination or you feel underestimated. It doesn't matter if it's because of, you know, like gender, age, appearance, whatever. There's some basic reasons people discriminate. Now, all these things you have to keep in mind, and then this can help you from just not wanting to punch somebody in the face standpoint too. I know it helped me, is you need to remember that whenever we talk about behavior and what people do and communication and just these kinds of problems, it's all grounded in complexity theory. And what that means is there's never just one cause. We can think, oh, it's because of my age or because I look this way. And maybe they even overtly say that. But generally, there's this interactionist networked element. And what I mean, so it's not psychobabble, is yes, it could have to do with some just basic ageism or whatever. But a lot of times, and let's look at this doctor scenario, it can be hierarchical. This person can think, okay, and we know this, doctors typically, whether we agree with it or not, or whatever any of our biases are, they occupy higher positions in kind of that hierarchy. And so when you look at this, and just from a seniority and societal view standpoint, you're a younger physical therapist, you come into that picture, especially if they don't know you really well, maybe they haven't worked with you. I mean, this all comes down to a combination of insecurity and trust. But it's just, it's years and years and years of this kind of training and that kind of social conditioning. And there's just always going to be, I mean, life is never going to be fair. People are going to do this. And remember, I'm going to give you solutions. I'm just grounding this because it's good to remind yourself. So, you know, you can keep these things front and center. Now, another piece of that is just people's self-concept and role security. We had somebody that, had sent a question in, I think a year ago, not too dissimilar, but it was more about this individual was in a, almost like a direct, like a lateral position. And it was like a threat to my job. And so that's not the case in this scenario. But sometimes if somebody feels like you're going to overshadow their expertise, and that can happen. I mean, with anybody that has been in their profession a long time, for every person that stays up on the research and the latest techniques, there's plenty of people that just kind of get lazy with it. So if you come in there and you know what you're talking about and you're confident and you're assertive, that can make them feel uncomfortable. Now they might attack your age, but again, going back to complexity theory, that's just a manifestation of a larger symptom. And it's usually more than one thing. So people are just insecure. That's a reality. And there might be an underlying fear that their knowledge and skills are just, hey, they're outdated. And that triggers a defensive response and all those things. You know, and then there's just the bigger aspect of there are always going to be, especially in the workplace now, some level of intergenerational misunderstandings. Different generations have different values, although that's not always the truth, right? Nothing's in a vacuum. I'm, what am I, 38 now? I definitely identify as a little bit more of a throwback, but the point is it doesn't matter. It's subjective to them. So a younger therapist's enthusiasm or eagerness or just the drive or the determination could be something that makes them feel insecure. So you get the idea. A lot of this stuff is insecurity. So what should you not do? And we had already had this discussion because we had spoken privately, but one of the things I had said when I asked her, just, well, how do you usually approach it? And they said, well, I usually try to just make it known that I'm following best practices and this is kind of what the research says and this is where they're at and that's why I'm giving the suggestion. And on the face, that looks like a great idea and can be part of a really good comprehensive strategy. It's very common if you're in a field that, you know, is just you're trying to help people and you want to show people I've done my due diligence, to lean on rational persuasion. And that's the use of evidence or facts, or just in the words of Aristotle, that would be logos. But most people aren't going to be convinced by facts alone. We say it all the time on this podcast. I hope it's something all of you shake your head at, but still remember when you're 80, you're not an expert until somebody invites you into their life as one. And as we said in a previous episode, the acid test for expertise is not just your perceived competence or your actual competence. It's, hey, does this person seem relatable, trustworthy, anything like that? So you can give them research, and God knows I've made this mistake, and they're going to throw that to the side and they're going to be like, thanks, know-it-all. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do that. That just means that that shouldn't be your go-to approach all the time. There's ample research that shows if you just give people information and logic, very rarely are you going to change their mind. We're emotional creatures. That's why storytelling works so well on us. You know, like we're very much not moved by facts, and you've got to be able to make sure that you have different perspectives with this. So anyway, I had asked other things that they had done and said, and you know, a lot of it just really was around establishing upfront expertise. And that's tough, right? Like you want to establish those things. But here's something that's really simple that can give you a tool right now that is something I probably didn't use enough, right? What you want to do is just make sure that at the end of the day, beyond anything else, that you always relate it back to a common goal. This means before you try to establish expertise, convince them of anything, let's say you've had four or five interactions, none of them, and I mean none of them, are going the way that you want, and you're like, all right, I am legitimately about to lose it on this person. So what I would recommend is you say something along the lines of, listen, you don't have to start with listen, but I understand that you may not see me as a peer, but we're both working with this individual. We're part of their care. And I really care about doing a good job. And I'd like to make your life easier. I'd like to make their life easier. So can we please find a way to find some common ground? Now, people are not used to being talked to that directly. And I'm going to dissect that here in a minute. But you shouldn't always worry at the onset of like, what kind of response am I going to get? Especially if that person's really insecure. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I have a confession to make. I am somebody whose social battery can run low fairly often. What do I mean by this? Despite the fact that I have a podcast and I have to do social media and I travel and speak, I get really worn down if I'm around people too much. And I'm not always the best at setting boundaries. And overall, there can just be sometimes I get a little irritated or aggravated if I have to be on all the time. It can be really easy for us to ignore our social battery, to spread ourselves thin, especially if you're somebody that wants to help others. And I've had to recognize that weakness in myself, not understanding that soon enough and letting myself get worn down. So if you're somebody that can really identify with that and you'd like the opportunity just to shut off sometimes, have somebody else guide you, help you, listen to you, anything like that, you will love BetterHelp. And it is very convenient. It's entirely online and it's going to be suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, somebody that will listen, somebody that will help you recharge. And you can also switch therapists at any time. You can find your sweet spot with BetterHelp. So go to betterhelp.com/AOC today and you can get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/AOC. People are not used to being talked to that directly. And I'm going to dissect that here in a minute, but you shouldn't always worry at the onset of like, what kind of response am I going to get? Especially if that person's really insecure, because they could fire back and just be like, okay. And remember, when you know how to express yourself, that can be intimidating too, because people that don't, now they're frozen. One, they didn't expect that. Two, they're trying to figure out what to say. So if you have an immediate bad reaction, don't panic, right? But more often than not, you'll be surprised at how something like that can actually work for you. And why is it? Because it just brings it back to a foundational argument. It brings it back to a foundational argument and a common goal and helps people see the bigger picture. And there's also value to just how you're phrasing that. So if you say something along the lines of, it seems like, or it feels like, I'm not seen as a peer, or it feels as if my opinion might not be valued, right? There's a little bit of like kind of a labeling there. And who knows, like that, I'll give you examples of what you could say back if they counter that in a minute. Just stay with this. So if you say it feels like you may not, you're putting the core issue out there. This is how I feel. This is how I feel. And then you ground that with just saying, but we both care about this individual. And being able to say, I'd like to make your life easier, I'd like to make her life easier. The underlying strategy there, and you want it to be an honest one, is I'm trying to work with you. Like most people, because of their self-interest, are going to be very amicable to the idea of you making their lives easier. And you know, if they are having a bad day and they've just been kind of an ass, that's something you can say to them that just makes them be like, all right, yeah, I kind of have been rude. Now on the other end, let's say they get defensive because it never hurts to do these thought experiments. And they're like, well, I don't know where you got the idea that I don't respect you. I respect you just fine. It's just, this is how I feel. Say, okay. And I'm sorry if you see that as an assumption, but based on some past interactions, it seems as if, and then, you know, you can take it from there. Now it's up to you to be discerning about the timing of this and the other nuances, because there's never one answer. That's the biggest thing that I get frustrated at sometimes, where people very much still want this prescriptive reductionist answer of, how can I handle this? It happened just recently when I was speaking as well. And by the way, I want to make it clear, that is not what this person who reached out was asking for. But I was speaking at a conference recently and somebody said, all right, you've talked a lot about different communication styles and drives, influence tactics, power dynamics. If you were in my situation today, which one would you use? And I said, well, I'm not going to dodge your question. I'll answer it. But I do just want to remind you that one of the first things we talked about was complexity and complexity theory, meaning that this is not something that is on an assembly line where it's deterministic and you know exactly what part fits where and that optimizes everything. The point is, with social interaction, it is small scale experimentation. You have to handle the known knowns. So I said, well, what are you doing now? Well, nothing. I mean, every now and then, like, I try to think of the drive stuff because I had read your book, and I said, okay. And how's that working? Because that's always just been scaffolding. It's great if you get a sense that somebody seems to be driven by this or this is a motivating force to them, but you now have to craft your words. Think of it like if you're a marketing executive. Let's imagine any of us, whether you care about that or not. Let's say we're marketing executives and we have Celsius. I'm giving them free advertising. It's not like we go into a room and we're like, all right, here's exactly what to say. No, you think of your demographic. You think of what they like, what they don't like. You start broadly. You start holistically. Those are the terms. You don't think reductionist. You think holistic. Okay, we know our audience is health conscious. We know that they want this, but they don't want that. You know, what is something that really appeals to them? Oh, we always want to make sure that we don't come off like a soft drink. We don't come off like some kind of crazy energy drink. We make it clear that we're healthier than this. These are people that make informed choices. Okay, they're informed choices. They want energy and they're health conscious. Awesome. There's probably validity to the fact that this is an achievement drive because people usually aren't drinking an energy drink or something like that and getting caffeine if they don't want to be productive and a spark. Sure, some of them like the taste, but let's stick with this here. And then, you know, people that like they're choosing Celsius because they don't want a bunch of crap in their body. So that's a security drive too. Awesome. We're off and running. Now, just talk about the things that people care about. And if you don't know what they care about, it's on you to get to know them. So essentially, I just told this individual, start with what you know. Start with something. Have some more conversations. Get more data. If you're listening to these people, they're going to give insight as to how they want to be communicated with or to. They are. I promise you. It's the concept of like, it's even related to just chaos theory. What we think is random, patterns emerge, but you have to interact. You have to be a part of that. You can't just think there's going to be one formula. There will never, ever, ever be one formula. Okay, so you go there, you say, I'm sorry, it seems like maybe we got off on the wrong foot or you don't see me as a peer. How can we make this better? How can we collaborate? And if they shut down, all right, you keep doing your job. Don't let it impact you. Change takes time. It's a process. It's a process. It's a process. I always think, and I try to give you the most complete answers I can. If things get worse, and drawing on personal experience, I know I worked with somebody once that, man, they were just not interested in finding that middle ground. And it's funny because for my nerds out there, when you think of the concept of a complex adaptive system, what eventually differentiates them the most over time is, you know, just because somebody has the capacity to adapt or evolve, well, let's just use the term of change, like the rate of that change is not always equal. And that's what like creates tension in our working relationships. So, hey, like, yes, me and this person both have the capacity to learn. We're functioning human beings, all that. But maybe I want to make progress on something and build an inroads on the relationship more than they do. And if that happens, okay, like they're not going to embrace that change. There's going to be more tension. I have more work to do. Now, this person eventually just became untenable. They weren't going to have it. There was something deeper going on. So you find somebody else, right? You think laterally. And if there's nobody else, then again, you just kind of map things out. Take a piece of paper. Take a piece of paper if you can't win this one person over. And I want you to just, like it's a network, I want you to write the names of everybody that is in this case, your healthcare system, or if you work at a bank, at your bank, write everybody's names down. And no, I don't care if you work with them directly. Just write it down. Map the system. Map what you do know. Map the names. And then what you should immediately see here is like, all right, if I want an increased amount of influence, I should probably get to know some of these people I don't know. That way, if, and I'm making up a name here, Marco is a barrier and continues to be a barrier, It's not just me and Marco. Now, the initial defensive response is, well, he's the one that does this. Come on. You know, be a problem solver. I get it when we're frustrated and the world seems small and we can convince ourselves that there's no other way. There's always another way. There's always another person to influence. There's always another approach, right? What there isn't is one magical thing to say. There's never going to be one magical thing to say. You just have to experience. You have to experiment a little bit there. Now, some other things, because I want to give you guys some scripts. Although scripts are reductionists, I get it. I'm just trying to meet you in the middle here. You could just say something along the lines of, and none of these are going to be wordsmith to the hilt, of just saying, hey, I really want to make sure we're on the same page for the sake of our patient. Can you help me understand any concerns you might have with my approach, right? Or is there anything I could do to make you feel more confident in what I'm doing? Like, sometimes don't worry, like, just play into their shit. Sorry for the language, but you know what you get with me. It's like, sometimes it pays to just be assertive, and that's what the classical textbook will say. Other times, just lose the battle, win the war. Just say, hey, you obviously have a lot of expertise and I'd like to learn from you and I'm hungry to learn and I want to really have great outcomes with this patient and work with you. So what is it I could do to earn your trust? That is always a very powerful thing to say. It's something I say and I mean it every time I say it. What is something I could do to earn your trust? And then obviously you have to decide, I mean, within moral and ethical bounds, if that's going to fit. But you know, that is a key tenet. Establishing common ground is not just a matter of easing tension. It's about saying, hey, there's a respect here and I want to work as part of a team. And those two are synergistic, right? But you know, first and foremost, if you want somebody to change their opinion, their behavior, whatever, you have to create the conditions necessary for that. And if somebody's already skeptical or they don't want to hear from you, or, you know, maybe you're in an argument, they're probably not going to change, right? Like they're not in a position to receive. And that's, again, where you have to think about the timing and the environment and all these other contextual factors that loop into one another. And we say it every episode when we do something like this, there is so much more to this stuff than most people think. And that's how a network works. If you look at, and if you're not familiar with the concept, just, you know, look up network systems, network theory, all that stuff. You know, it's the interconnectedness between things. And man, is it pretty incredible when you see these things. So anything you can do that really says, hey, I understand we might have different approaches. I think our end goal is the same. If we could explore the best possible care plan together, that'd be awesome. I value your experience. I'd like to know what I can do to earn your trust, anything like that. Now, as we close out, what I would encourage some of you to do as well, and I'm going to speak somewhat broadly here because this will be a future episode and it's something that I'm working on. I need you to think about what your opposite would be. Like, think about your opposite. Like, for me, I can tend to be a pretty assertive person. I'm somebody that just gets direct to the point. Now, to some, that can seem punchy and aggressive. To me, it's the ultimate sign of respect. I'm just trying to, you know, tell you how I feel. You always know where you stand with me. And if you don't, I'm always happy to tell you. And I'll try to be, you know, diplomatic about it. But I just try to just be upfront. So my opposite would be I always have to work on just kind of taking a beat and being more patient sometimes, right? And it's just tricky. Like, you have to sometimes remember, okay, what is the opposite version of me? What would they do? And how can I integrate a little bit of that? And I bring this up for a reason. This individual that we are talking about disclosed, hey, admittedly, I am a bit of a quieter person. I am, you know, I come from a household where we're not really taught to express ourselves in a certain way. You know, no matter what you accomplish, you haven't really accomplished anything. So, you know, I understand I'm a little bit quiet. I understand how I might come across. And that's one thing that I just encourage you to remember too. You might think it has to do with one thing. Like I said earlier, it could do with a million pieces, but either way, and this isn't me telling her or you, change your personality, change who you are. But it is me saying, maybe embrace the range of multiple aspects of your personality. The root term of personality is persona. And there's different personas in all of us. We all have different things we get animated about. This was kind of like when we run a business development course, an entrepreneur course called Brand Builder. You can always go to artofcoaching.com/events if you want to learn about those things, by the way, or just go to artofcoaching.com and check our mentoring, because we do one-to-one business mentoring there as well. And this individual said, I don't like selling. I don't like selling, and it's not in my personality to sell. And whenever I hear it's not in my personality, I know, as well as you know, and they know, that that's situational. Because the same person that says this isn't my personality and blah, 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 is the same person that told me about this amazing restaurant they loved and got really animated and hyped up. And they also told me about all these great movies that they had seen recently. So I took a beat and I said, I think you need to see yourself in a real, more realistic context. You're one of the most passionate people I know about food and movies and, you know, different books. The key is you've got to take that version of yourself sometimes and inject it into this part of you. Well, but that's different. You know, that stuff, I don't know, like the stakes aren't high. I'm just telling you about something I care about. And I said, well, what do you think you're doing when you tell me about your business? And that's when it clicked. And it's just really a matter of confidence, and it's a matter of fear of rejection. And that's something that takes time. I get it. But that's why you want to work on integrating your opposite. And for those of you familiar, this would be very similar to the idea of like Carl Jung's shadow work. Although despite what that sounds like, and there's a lot of misinterpretation about this because it's one of those topics that sounds edgy, so people like to lean on it because it gets some views. Shadow work is not about becoming a more aggressive version of yourself. It is about integrating your opposite or integrating different parts of yourself that I don't really like the word repress, but maybe you have kind of killed off or it's put on the bottom shelf or whatever. In that case, for her, it was like, hey, in my family, we were taught to not really express ourselves this way. Okay, great. Well, there's social learning there. So that's part of her shadow, the part of her that doesn't do that. I worked in an environment once where like it was almost go team to the point that if you had any individual accomplishment, you were looked at as somebody that was not a member of a team. So, and I've talked about this before, I went through like a year or two, maybe even three, where I had a lot of trouble celebrating my accomplishments. And it took me to a dark place because I just really wasn't really impressed with any of my work to an unhealthy degree. So I had to learn, all right, I got to integrate more of that opposite. I need to like, I'm going to celebrate some things. So go to your friend, your partner, your parents, somebody that doesn't like you, whatever. And just try to say like, hey, what are, like if I had an alter ego or if I had an opposite, anything like that, what would that be? What would that be like? What are some distinguishing characteristics? And they won't get it at first. So, you know, you'll want to be a little bit more clear. We'll just be like, well, for example, I know that I can be a little quieter sometimes. So like maybe my opposite is somebody that's not necessarily loud, but a little bit more assertive or can do this. Or I know you, for example, are very funny in kind of a silly slapstick way. So you're at, you know, an opposite there could be somebody with an intense sense of realism, and then kind of go from that and write some of those things down and then think, okay, why don't I integrate enough of that? Why don't I embrace that aspect of myself? And part of the answer is, whether you know it or not, aside from the obvious of it being uncomfortable or whatever, is you don't really train it. So you don't know what that's like. And so there's not a lot of confidence in using it. It's like a tool, something broke in your house and you have the tool necessary to fix it, but you're like not sure how. So you're looking up things on YouTube or whatever. It's the same idea. And other animals don't really have this issue so much because many animals learn through play fighting, all those kinds of things. That's how they learn boundary setting. That's how they learn in general. That's how they actually normalize conflict de-escalation is, you know, you see two lions playing or cubs, you know, they know, all right, this was too far. That pissed him off. He got mad at that. Well, like we don't really do that as humans. We don't practice those scenarios. Now, you know where I'm going with this. If you haven't listened to the podcast before, it's a huge reason we use improv and role playing. The role playing is always more tactical. It's like social scrimmaging, adversarial simulation, because it gives you a chance to rehearse and refine for real life. And so we'll have people that say, hey, I'm a little quieter. I need to kind of almost like, I need to escalate it a little bit. Okay, well, we don't go from 2 to 10, but let's maybe do a 3-minute thing. I'll be this person. You be yourself. I'm going to say something kind of inflammatory to you. Give me an example of what this individual might actually say. And let's work on some responses. And on the other hand, we've had people that are like, I lose my cool. So I need to be put into a corner, whatever. It's a lot of fun. It's that thing. It's like a roller coaster. You get on it. You're a little worried at first. I don't know how this is going to feel. I'm going to feel dumb. You do it. Then you're like, oh God, that felt good. Or it's this still a little weird, but I need to do it again. I need, it gets to be cathartic. So do that. And they're like, why wouldn't you train for the things you do every day? You guys are in fields where you guide people, you deal with people. That's going to bring conflict. And the only way you learn to really beat your adversary is by taking on traits of your opposite. It's in every story. So for as many people quote Carl Jung through the idea of, you know, shadow work, I mean, this goes back to concepts of the anti-hero, which has been around for a very, very, very long time. And it also goes into different aspects of just the hero's journey. And there's different flavors of these things, right? It's saying, okay, I've got to be a little bit less black and white. I've got to be a little bit more gray. And that's when there's a good villain in a book or in a movie, is they're almost the opposite of the hero or the protagonist, because a protagonist doesn't necessarily have to be heroic. And the only way the protagonist overcomes that is by embracing a little bit more of that quote unquote ethical or functional dark side, right? Going a little bit more to the gray. Otherwise, what do they learn? They don't learn anything, you know? And if they don't change and if they don't adapt, well, that's when it's a negative story arc and they didn't get what they wanted. If they do adapt, it's a positive story arc in whatever sense of the term that means, based on what they want, because real people have wants and needs. If it's a neutral story arc, they probably just didn't do anything. They just kept going. And that's what we see when there's people that are like, well, everybody else is the problem, or I don't need to do that. I'm good enough at communication. Like that's headed towards a neutral or negative story arc. You need to be the influencing variable, because most other people are too lazy and too insecure. All right. Hopefully this gave you some helpful tips. I want to know. I know everybody's busy. Reach out to us. info@artofcoaching.com. We'd love to know. I don't care if you hate the podcast, let us know. If you love the podcast, let us know. At the very least, if you're not going to do that, rank it. Rank it, rate it, tell a friend about it. We appreciate you. Talk to you soon.